Hi, I'm Leela Ainge, psychologist researcher and someone who's been thinking a lot lately about what really makes life feel good. Welcome back to Psychologically Speaking, a podcast all about human behaviour where we bring together fascinating research, insights and lived experiences. This season, I've been exploring joy and how it moves through our lives and the weight it carries as a serious psychological resource. Today, we're going to be talking about something that steals joy for so many of us, imposter phenomenon. If you've listened since season one, you'll know this is where the podcast began, with my research into imposter phenomenon. That sense of feeling like a fraud, believing our successes are down to luck rather than skill, and waiting for the moment that somebody finds out we're not quite as good as they think we are. What my research with entrepreneurs showed is that imposter experiences are super contextual. They get dialed up or dialed down depending on our environment. And when they're dialed up, they don't just make us doubt ourselves, they become thieves of joy. And I get asked about this all of the time. The number one thing that people want to know is, how do we fix it? What's my advice? How do we stop imposter? So in today's episode, I'm sharing the mix that I always return to, what comes up in coaching sessions, what the scientific research tells us, and practical things you can do today that both boost your joy and reduce imposter experiences. Here's what imposter does. Imagine you have landed a client and instead of joy, you're starting to fear that they'll regret choosing you. You finish a project, but instead of pride, you think it wasn't good enough. And someone praises your work and instead of delight, you go, I was really lucky. Psychologists call these three things part of the imposter cycle. It's over-preparing, overachieving, then feeling relief rather than joy. And the cycle resets. And because imposter thrives on comparison, it doesn't just rob you of your joy, it makes other people's joy feel dangerous too. So I want to talk about why self-promotion hits so hard. And there is a ton of self-promotion research. And women don't hold back from putting themselves out there because they lack confidence. They hold back because they've learned to anticipate backlash. And the psychology explains why. We know that with social norms, modesty is expected from women. We are expected to be demure. We're expected to be quiet. Self-promotion boosts competence, but it reduces warmth. This is what the studies show. We have this kind of identity penalty as well. So there's this idea that being seen as somebody who is an agent or ambitious or assertive clashes with those expectations that women should be communal, that they should be caregivers. So instead of joy, when we are good at something, when we want to celebrate something that we've done well, we tend to brace for judgment. And is it any wonder then that women are not putting themselves forward and saying, hey, I did this great thing? And this is all before something else comes in, which is called the peer effect. So really interestingly, there was some research not so long ago, and this covered nearly 3,000 participants. And it was looking at how people felt when they watch other people doing self-promotion activities. There's a lot we can learn from this study. Researchers compared superiors, peers, and subordinates. The key findings from this research were that peers trigger negative emotions. You know, observers were reporting things like irritation, envy, defensiveness. And it's because people are most similar. So when you're looking at a peer, they are most similar to you. And it's a threat comparison. So all that's going on is this social identity process and this social comparison process of saying there's a bit of a threat there. This person is very much like you. And look how well they're doing. Their success highlights gaps in our own progress. And this is really normal. Social comparison is a really useful thing that happens, that humans have. It allows us to understand where we are with our life. It allows us to say, where am I? Am I nearer to the point I want to be, or have I got more work to do? So the research really shows that when we see our peers succeeding, it doesn't inspire us. And this inspiration is really interesting. So their wins don't generate hope or motivation in us, because observers dismiss them as irrelevant or unearned in some respects. Relevance makes it worse, though, because if a peer's success is in the same domain as yours, so if I see somebody, for example, in the coaching domain or in the psychology research domain, and they're writing about something on LinkedIn or Instagram, and this is a big win for them, then I am more likely to think, oh my God, maybe that person is doing the things I want to do. So there might be some envy in there. There may be even some dismissiveness, such as me thinking, well, I know they didn't work that hard for that, or making assumptions like that. And I'm just saying these things because these are the uncomfortable truths of how we think as humans. No matter how great we think we are, we have all had these pangs or these doubts or these moments that have gone through our heads at some point in time, which have said, oh, wow, how have they got that success? And why am I not getting that success? So whether it's another freelancer landing the client that you wanted or a type of client you wanted, the discomfort is going to be so much stronger when they are peers. And we judge peers more harshly as a result. We are less likely to think that our peers have earned their success. I mean, this stuff is brutal, right? So the bottom line here is then that peer self-promotion creates threat and irritation. And what they found on the reverse, though, was that if this self-promotion is coming from somebody who is further on than us, or somebody who is superior to us, we're going to find it inspirational and motivational. It does help to explain then, doesn't it, why joy feels really fragile when we start thinking about imposter phenomenon. Because when we put ourselves out there, it's not that we don't feel proud. It's not that we've not got the confidence to put ourselves out there. It's just that we've learned to expect this pushback because we can all relate to this pushback. We've all had those feelings. Either we've sensed it coming off other people when we've promoted, or when we see other people promote themselves, we do have some of these thoughts. And that anticipation of this backlash is one of imposter phenomenon's most effective tricks. It's stealing the joy before you can even let yourself feel it. And it's not new. You know, this isn't a current phenomenon. Long before Instagram, you had figures like Tony Robbins and Oprah Winfrey and Anita Roddick and Delia Smith and Jane Fonda. They were doing all of this self-promotion work and they were seen as motivational. They were projecting their success in ways that people found motivational, even life-changing. They were the OG influencers. So I've got a feminist invitation for you, and here's where I want to invite you to do something uncomfortable. When you feel that flicker of irritation or envy at another woman's post, don't unfollow. And I know that this is really popular advice with coaches and in coaching spaces. Stay in your lane, unfollow people that don't bring you joy, clean stuff out, you know, Marie Kondo your social media life. But I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying don't unfollow those people. Don't shrink back. Stay with it. And I want you to ask yourself this question. What part of me feels threatened here? And then flip it to, what can I learn from her success that might be relevant or replicable for me? Because there's a deeply feminist reason to rewrite how we respond to other women and men in our online spaces. Because every time we diminish, dismiss, or distance ourselves from another person's visibility, we are reinforcing that very backlash we fear. But every time we meet another woman's success with curiosity, with generosity, even with celebration, We're chipping away at those old norms, and we make it safer for her and for ourselves. So on the peer thing, though, just something really interesting here, because most of my research happens around communities, and they really are magic. I think they're magical. That's why I'm researching them. But what we know is that communities do is that they flip that uncomfortable peer relationship into something more like a teammate. And that's the psychology shifting again. Because when someone is part of what we call our in-group, our trusted circle of people, we experience their wins very differently. Instead of threat, we feel pride. Instead of defensiveness, we feel connection. And social identity theory then tells us that in-group member success boosts our own self-esteem because they reflect well on the whole group. That's why communities feel like such powerful incubators of joy. It softens the sharp edges of something like peer comparison. You know, it can transform it into a sense of us together. I said I would deliver today some practical things to reclaim joy. But one of those is to start breaking that cycle. Psychology usually points to three really practical things to do here. One, reframing and comparison. I mean, psychologists say to reframe things. That's just pretty much your standard response as a psychologist is, can you reframe that? But if a peer success does feel threatening, shift how you frame your own. Instead of, you know, look at me, share wins as here's what worked for me. Maybe that helps you too. You know, you're turning comparison from a threat position into inspirational. Some people do this really well in online spaces, and you do feel that they are a warm hug rather than a threat. The next thing you can do is to practice visibility in those safer spaces. Start where you feel safe, because trusted communities is where things like imposter talk is normalized. You know, it creates safety. You can share wins, but you can also share the things that haven't gone so well. But sharing wins is a bit like building a muscle memory. The more you do it, the better it feels. Anchor yourself in joy itself. Rather than waiting for permission, you've got to let joy in. And I think what we've started to explore during this whole season is that joy is a fuel. You know, it isn't a reward. It's not something you have to wait for. You don't have to wait till Friday to celebrate your wins. You don't have to wait to be ready to have successes. And if you're treating joy as something that is that reward, then you're not using the fuel of it through the whole journey. Self-compassion research, and especially Kristin Neff's work, really backs this up. You know, it shows that when we meet ourselves with kindness, we stay more open to joy. And then we know that the fear of backlash and whispers in the background, if we are choosing joy over fear, then that minimizes it.
Sometimes all you need is a brew and a good chat to get clarity. I'm excited to share that I'm offering in-person coaching sessions starting in Birmingham and Manchester, with Nottingham and London coming soon. These are relaxed one-to-one sessions in hand-picked venues where you can take a deep breath and bring what's holding you back and explore what's next. Each session lasts around 45 minutes to an hour. Your tea or coffee is included, and it's simply a low-pressure way to try coaching face-to-face before committing. Spaces are limited, so if you've been curious about coaching, now's the time. Book via the link in my website, www.leelaange.co.uk. I'd love to meet you in person.
So the counterintuitive bit for me is I don't want you to avoid people who self-promote. And the most successful people don't avoid promoting themselves either. They turn it into fuel. Here's how you can do that with psychology behind every single step. Reframing is really good. If we use other people as benchmarks, those peer wins aren't proof that we're behind, they're proof that that is possible. That allows you to then go and borrow the blueprint. We find peers are inspirational when their success feels achievable for us. Break it down and say to yourself, what steps could I take that would get me where they are? Or what steps did they take that I can adopt? What's easy for me? The next thing is really about tackling that envious emotion, which is a really normal human emotion. We've all experienced it at some point in our lives. And what you want to do here is to say, how can I turn that envy into curiosity? Because curiosity is really an emotional leveler. If you are feeling triggered in any sense, in any part of your life, opening up curiosity is a surefire way to put a wet blanket onto any emotional fire that you're feeling. Instead of shaming, it's saying, well, what's this telling me that I want? And allow yourself to say that. Allow yourself to have those desires. Maybe you've never really said that desire out loud. And usually in coaching sessions, when I have a client who says, oh, I don't like this, or I don't like the way people do that. And I'll say, take me through what it is that you're not enjoying about that. It's not usually that the way that other person is showing up. It's not what they've done. It's more a case of the individual I'm talking to is not really reconciled with what they really want. And when we start to talk about, well, what do you want? What would you do? They realise that actually it's just hit a nerve because they've not got there yet, or they've not articulated it. Part of the reason people don't articulate things is because they don't feel they can really go for it. And another example of how women can shrink their desires or their ambitions sometimes. The next technique to use is something like a spotlight and soften. So because women face this backlash in a disproportionate way around self-promotion, celebrating others we know builds reciprocity. So we know that if we can highlight another peer's success and strengths, it actually does something for your own visibility. And it's riding on the coattails of. And all of these social platforms we've got, they really love it when we support other people and we like them. And that's what people are after anyway. So, you know, go for it. The next thing is to think about the words that people are using. We often will read something and think, well, has that person earned this success? You know, did they work as hard as us? How's that person managed to do that? Oh, here's what I would do differently. And that judging behaviour is something that we all do, whether we admit it or not, or whether we consciously know we do it or not. So if you are able to notice yourself doing that, then something that you can do is start to think about the words they're using. What success are they talking about? What language are they using? And is that language that you can start to use as well? So the next thing is to really think about what your role models in your social circles are giving you. Are you following role models? And that's such a good thing to do as well. Because we know that we're inspired when we see a continuum. We like story arcs, we like beginnings, middles and ends. We like to see how people are struggling. We like to see how people get over life hurdles. So if you can put some of that into your social sphere, then that's going to be inspirational for you as well. I think what it comes down to is this, is that psychology tells us that peer wins are going to trigger comparison. It's a fact, it's going to happen. But the feminist invitation I've got for you today is to flip that energy. So just go, no, I just refuse to keep going through this cycle because I don't want to see other women as a threat. And how can you move them from threat to blueprint? So from envy to curiosity. And the most successful women don't resent peer promotion. I think that's quite obvious when you start looking at really successful women in online spaces. You look at their language, you look at how they work. They are genuinely supportive externally, and they turn that into their own motivation. They're going, here's how I study that person. Here's what I've taken from them. And they are constantly learning. So here's today's joy experiment for you. I want you to notice one moment this week where joy feels unsafe for you. So is that you being able to put out your own joy and do your own celebrations, or is it you noticing somebody else celebrating in your uncomfortableness, envy or judgment or critique of somebody else's self-promotion? I want you to ask yourself, is this a fear of backlash, or is it comparison talking? I want you to use that reframing of, I don't need permission to feel joy. Because if you feel joy, you're going to broaden your experiences. This stuff reduces the effect that imposter experiences can have on us in online spaces. Ultimately, we're making online spaces and entrepreneurial spaces safer for everybody when we decide to reclaim our joy. And we're not going to take part in holding back. We're going to support and cheer on our peers. Thank you for listening to Psychologically Speaking, the Joy Experiments. If this episode resonated, please share it with somebody who needs the reminder that joy is fuel, it's not fraud. And a reminder to follow and rate the podcast, as it makes a huge difference to independent podcasters like me. If you could find your way to write a review, I would really appreciate it.